You can support CITR and Shape Your Media by making a pledge. You can also make a pledge now online at www.citr.ca/fundrive. How do you like your media, John?
Spicy. Is that good?
Thank you.
Wait, hold on.
I think
Keegan also said spicy. Can I say something else?
Mm-hmm.
No, can you ask me a question again?
How do you like your media?
Well done. But that's not like what CITR is, more like a rare steak.
Slow down. You're not in a race. Alcohol-related deaths are one of the leading preventable causes of death in Canada. Please remember to drink responsibly.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin's Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
This is Zach from Black Breath, and you are listening to the Flex Your Head show on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC.
No, you're not. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and this is the White Noise Show. That's a half hour of sketch comedy, followed by a bit of chit-chat, bit of kick-ass music. It's the White Noise After Show. So you've got a full hour of entertainment coming up. We are going to start with the White Noise Show. I'm joined by Con and Sierra.
Have you memorized this, Beatle?
You do it 8,000 times, and it's stuck in your head. Then it's same with like stand up.
You don't try to branch out.
It's the same with stand up.
Innovate
though.
A bit, dynamic.
I did. That was slightly different. You see, I know it so well. I notice the nuanced differences each week to week.
That's a good point.
You know,
yeah,
the intonation's so pretty different.
The intonation's a bit high.
I actually felt like that might have been a real challenge for you because we started off the wrong show, so you really caught off guard.
Yeah, I was.
You had to catch up on your toes.
Well, it was meant to be a CITR radio tag, which I thought would be really cool. It'd be like CITR 101.9, and we come in, and no, it was like some other show's plug.
Yeah, we're a month early for this. What is this happening?
Sorry,
here?
Other show, you've been usurped.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, so we are the White Noise Show as per usual. So definitely some sketch comedy coming up, and then we've got some interesting topics for the after show. We're gonna be talking about funerals because that's fun.
We're that happy of a crowd.
Yeah, technology, a few other weird things. We get into our like abstract sort of arguments. It's not gonna just be about the weather. It'll be more exciting than that, we promise.
Last week was an anomaly.
I don't think it was that bad.
We abandoned.
We weren't even
there
here.
Was no last
week.
We weren't
here last week.
The week before that.
So we might as well have been talking about the weather, is what I'm saying.
True.
We don't ever do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on with it. Let's do a bit of comedy. All right. So sit back, enjoy a bit of white noise.
Warning: the following programming may not be suitable for anyone. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's show is brought to you in part by the Oscars, a night where millionaires get to tell you how to live your life. First up tonight is a funeral.
We are gathered here today to mourn the loss of a great man. Grandpa Burger of the A&W family, creator of the Triple Patty Burger. He passed away suddenly this week due to a massive heart attack. He will live long in our memories, but not as long as the low-grade meat in my intestines. So let's raise our glasses of root beer and drink to his delicious memory.
Why did he always have to have three patties? Why couldn't he have a side salad once in a while?
He always had to do one better than me. I told him to stick to the doubles.
And why is he here?
He is his son, darling.
To another woman! That chicken stripping whore! I can't look at him! The chubby chicken bastard!
Calm down, drink your milkshake. And actually, he looks like he slimmed down. More of a grilled chicken now. Gosh, our teenage son isn't looking as good. I thought with the lettuce and a tomato, maybe he would be a bit healthier, but he's still so flabby.
Leave him alone.
Shit. Here comes Uncle Angus.
Howdy, folks.
Quit it, Angus. You're from North Vancouver, not North Dakota.
Sorry. You seen how good chubby chicken is looking? Sorry. Let me get this beanbag chair for you to sit down on. Oh, never mind. That's your son.
I don't eat fast food. I wait for it to stop. Next up tonight is the documentary.
After the success of Johnny Cash's Live from Folsom Prison album, many greats have been inspired to perform similar gigs. The Sex Pistols played a gig at Chelmsford, Jerry Garcia played Oregon State Prison, and the Cramps actually played at a mental institution. So it is only fitting this generation's most beloved musicians follow suit. We are proud to present, live from Rikers Island, Justin Bieber! Good evening, I'm Clive Tenderly, and I'm sitting down with one of this generation's most polarizing figures, Justin Bieber.
Sup, man?
Some have called you a once-in-a-generation talent, a genius. Others have called you an asshole. Which is the truth?
Does it matter?
Wow, maybe you are a genius.
Does it matter?
Maybe I jumped the gun there. So, why are you playing a gig in a prison?
'Cause bitches love me.
There are not a lot of prepubescent girls in prison. Is this really your target audience?
Whatever. Everyone secretly loves pop music.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do. It's how I feel, so they feel it too.
Not necessarily.
You're not necessarily.
Okay, so are you going to have a full band with you?
No. Acoustic, just me, and my backing track, and 20 dancers.
Right. And are you going to play a long set?
I'm a professional. My gigs are always long, but tonight is going to be extra special. A full 20 minutes, unless somebody texts and I got somewhere to be.
Naturally. And is this something you hope to do again, perhaps even regularly?
Nah, once this part of my community service is over, I won't do it again.
Oh, what did you do to earn community service?
Fuck if I know. I just woke up holding an Uzi in my cock. Fuck knows how I got there. Next thing I know, people are throwing around the word manslaughter, and I'm left playing the only show whose green room doubles as an execution chamber.
Are you at all concerned for your safety during the gig?
Well, it was a choice between doing this or working in an old people's home. And to be honest, I'd rather be stabbed than have to wipe an old person's ass.
Well, good luck with the gig. It was nice talking to you.
I hate you.
Put your shanks together for Justin Bieber!
Hey everyone, let's party!
Show us your dick!
Shake it, pretty boy!
I bet I could fit a hole of him in my mouth.
I feel ambivalent to this whole thing!
And I didn't want to. The gig continued as such, a mixture of violent sexual innuendos, not so empty threats, and smatterings of indifference. Though there was a surprising amount of singing along to the smash hit Boyfriend. Bieber finished the show unscathed, though three of his backup dancers are still unaccounted for. When asked to comment on the disappearances, Bieber is quoted as saying he couldn't give a shit. And I've been so
caught up in my job. I don't like being called a big Justin Bieber fan. I'm a husky Justin Bieber fan. Next up tonight is a meeting.
man, could we have a house meeting?
Okay. What is it this time? Is it the heroin?
No.
Okay, well, it better not be about the essential oils. You know they hide my body odor.
It's not that.
Oh, I bet it's the group sex.
No.
I told you, you were invited.
Honestly, it isn't.
Is it that I host too much living room Quidditch?
No.
Is it the dead hookers? You know I can't move them. Someone might see. Again.
It's not that.
Well, it's gotta be the Hitler posters.
They're fine. I like the mustaches.
Well, then is it that I leased the bathroom to an exchange student?
No.
He said the crab shells are temporary.
I know.
Is it the grenades? It's the grenades, isn't it?
No.
I'm holding them for a friend, the one who's a Crip. Or is he a blood? It's probably not important.
For the last time, no. I like the grenades. They go great on the coffee table with my pine cones.
Well, what's the problem?
Could you not leave your receipts everywhere? Because, you know, I got OCD.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You're suffocating me. I'm moving.
I had a roommate. I thought it'd be like living at home again with my mum, but my roommate didn't appreciate it when I joined him in the bathtub. I mean, who's gonna do my back? Next up tonight, people are fine dining.
Have you decided what you're having?
I'll have the filet mongol, please.
With fries or toes?
Toes.
And for sir?
Oh, sorry, it's hard. There are just so many options.
Well, I'd recommend the raw children liver pâté or the Keith Wellington. Melts in your mouth.
How's the Mexican here?
To be honest, not as good as when you have it in actual Mexico.
Always the case.
I've decided. To start, I'll have some of the calamari.
That's pronounced Colin Mockery.
Oh, my mistake. And for a main, a shepherd pie, please.
Excellent choice, sir. Can I recommend a glass of milk to pair with your shepherd pie and filet mongol?
Please.
I suggest something grass-fed, free-range, maybe a Wisconsin.
Sure, dealer's choice.
Excellent, I will be right back with your drinks. Anne, get your tits out, I need 2 pints ASAP.
I could never eat another human. The first one put me right off. Next up tonight, someone is making a movie.
Ah, Manuel, what's up?
Hi, sir. I'm just a bit concerned that my screenplay has been completely whitewashed.
Whitewashed? How so?
Well, for starters, it was called The Compassion and Altruism of Jesus Christ, a Radical Jew in Palestine, a story about love and revolt, abstinence and malfeasance, in the age of Cleopatra.
Yeah?
You've changed it to Pontius Pilate and the 12 Angry White Guys.
We had to cut down the title a little bit. Yours was a double-fisted mouthful.
But the Romans weren't even white. They were Mediterranean and fairly ethnically ambiguous. I was walking past the set and you made them all blonde.
Ah, you see, we're trying not to cast as ethnically ambiguous. It's kind of racially insensitive, and invariably the roles always go to Mexicans and Colombians.
But Latin Americans are significantly underrepresented already.
And you think they're cool playing Arabs and other races? It's humiliating.
All right, but I see you've cast David Spielman as Jesus.
Is that an issue?
He's white.
Oh, Manuel, please don't be so superficial. I spoke with his mom, and she's assured me that he is definitely Jewish. And I heard a vicious rumor swirling around about him and a prostitute.
Okay, that's fair, but you've also totally removed my token black character.
I'm sorry, black character?
The one who inspires Jesus Christ by laying down at his feet?
Oh God, that was just racist, man.
What?
The one you had groveling at his feet about trying to end slavery? Yeah. He didn't survive the first cut. You gotta try to be more progressive.
Well, he's still there. You just made him Polish.
Manuel, it's better this way. I know what I'm doing.
I'm just not convinced it's going to be any good, Mr. Goebbels.
Trust in your work, Manuel. The Führer is gonna love it.
I hope so.
He better. I spent ages painting all those tanks white with blonde toupees for the Blitz at the end.
I always wanted a tank. Then we'll see who will nick my lunch money. Next up tonight, Cal and Neil are back!
Oh,
about it, Neil. You're going to give yourself a stomach ulcer.
I can't. I'm still covered in blue fucking paint.
Oh, didn't my homemade makeover remover help?
No, because it was mainly piss.
Oh, and blue food colouring. Oh, that must be why you're even more blue.
Oh, why? Why me?
Come on, man. Let's cheer you up. Let's go get drunk.
Okay. That'd be nice.
Yeah, see, plus it's been ages since we robbed the pub.
All right, so what's the plan?
I was thinking we go in there and rob the place.
All right, but how?
With a plum.
You're a plum. No, what we do is we go in, you fake a heart attack, and I'll pour us two cold ones.
Oh, okay. So when do I use the gun?
No guns. I don't want to run. I always end up spilling my pint.
Oh, okay, yeah, fine. I'll just bring the grenade then.
No grenades. They only just stitched my pinky back on.
Oh, I told you it was my fault. I was sleep grenading.
Put it down. Leave it in that kid's sandbox. We can come pick it up on the way home.
But what if a kid finds it?
Finders keepers. Ah, the pub. Ever since they banned smoking, it smells fresh in here. Like fresh urine.
And a hint of spilt lager.
Yeah, and a soupçon of vomit.
Are you Blanca's gonna order something?
One second, sir. Alright, now, Carl.
Now what?
You know, pretend to die.
Oh, right, yeah. Et tu, Brute? Oh!
What? You're not stabbed, you twat.
I am a little. Remember from earlier when I was buttering your toes wrong?
Well, you did miss most of the fucking edges, didn't you? But no. You're meant to be having a heart attack.
Oh, right. Sorry. I was a bit distracted outside due to the bleeding.
You are such a wuss. All right, now, go over there and die.
Oh, the things I do for you.
Yeah, whatever. Jesus Christ.
You all right, lad?
Woe is me!
You what?
I think I'm ill!
You look fine, mate. Though your pal looks a funny shade of blue. Oi, what are you doing behind the bar?
Oh, am I not meant to be here?
No, you fucking ain't. And what are you doing with those nuts? Put them back in your pants and get out of me, bub.
To be or not to be?
Carl! Run! Quick!
Oh, I just put two songs on the jukebox!
Run, he's got a club!
Chess or backgammon?
It's wooden!
Like, for whittling?
No, hitting! Move, you fucking imbecile!
Come back here, you bear and muppets!
What about our beers?
It's all right. We'll go rob a Safeway. They got a pharmacy department too. Nick some nice Vicodin for dessert.
Yummy.
I like going to the pub. Seeing the proper alcoholics makes me feel less guilty about my drunkenness. Next up tonight is an advert.
Willkommen to Übermenschies! We love having the famous guest visit, as long as you aren't part of the industrial military complex. We pride ourselves in being better than the C-listers gelato shop down the street at El Duce Gelate. Ooh, we'll take some secret photos and your fingerprints and plaster them all over our walls and then have sex with your wives. We're so uber cool, yeah? But enough about them. You may ask, what kind of flavors we have? This isn't your average kind of Clark Kent ice cream shop. Of our many uber delicious creations, chocolate zeitgeist, Black Forest Schadenfreude and Vanilla Dasein are our most popular. But naturally, you are at Übermenschies, so you'll want the best. We've got the Knight of Faith Knickerbocker Glory, the Mutant Mudslides, and of course, the Wunderbar Wufflebites. For our most refined customers, we even have a secret menu. The only item on this menu is an apple strudel flavored with yak's milk frozen yogurt and the blood of our enemies. We know it sounds a bit weird, but so are you for coming here. As an extra fun event, we hold weekly anarchist meetups to network with other like-minded, delusional members of the intelligentsia. At Übermenschies, we know you love to hate the government and everyone around us. but it's so much more fun over some frozen dessert. Ach ja, just killed a weak old peasant? Tell your server and receive 10% off.
I don't eat ice cream. It gives me nightmares, usually involving Ben and Jerry force-feeding me chunky monkeys, and I'm not talking about the ice cream. Next up tonight is a new feature. This is the first of a series of tales about my distant cousin and archenemy, Dick Whiteless.
Oh, somebody please call. Afternoon? Dick Whiteless, private detective. How can I help?
Wanker.
sir? Sir, how can I be of assistance? Oh, he's gone. Shit. Come in!
Mr. Whiteless?
No, Mr. Whiteless.
Is he in?
He doesn't exist.
Oh, well, then I'll leave.
Perhaps I can help.
I doubt it. I need a professional.
What seems to be the problem?
My dog has gone missing.
Oh, great.
No, it isn't.
I mean, I can help. I used to work in missing persons.
But he's not a person.
I understand that, Mrs.
Cock.
What? Pardon?
Cock. My husband's great-grandfather was a proud rooster breeder, but my friends call me Poppy.
Oh, Mrs. Poppycock.
Has a nice ring, doesn't it?
About this dog, can you describe him?
He's short, furry, smells bad in the rain, wet nose.
Perhaps you could be a little more specific?
He barks when approached by strangers, likes dog treats.
Breed?
American.
I don't think that's a breed, but, colour?
Brownish.
Where did you lose him?
Somewhere between my house and okay. Belgium.
Belgium?
I definitely had him when we left Belgium.
That might be quite tricky. You know, what vehicle were you in?
My car.
Okay, may I inspect it?
As you wish. Have you found anything?
I think I might have found a clue.
Really?
You see this discoloration here in the wheel well?
Yes.
I'm fairly sure that is part of your dog's brain.
Oh, my God, you think I killed him?
That, or he's been listening to the Smiths a bit too long and decided to see if there really is a light that never goes out.
Poor doggy. I only just got him 2 days ago. We had so much fun putting him in the little sailor outfits. I wonder what the last thing was that went through his head.
My guess would be the tyre.
I had a great dog, but my stupid mum pretended she was allergic, so I had to get rid of it. I believed her until she suddenly became allergic to my dad. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Necklepud, Sierra Wiley, Nick Rinker, Kenneth Tynan, and Simon Welton.
Guest writing by Connor Necklepud and Sierra Wiley.
Alright, there you go. That was the White Noise show. I hope you enjoyed the half hour of sketch comedy. We will be back next week with a very special show because it's is it Women's Day? Is that
International
Women's Day? International Women's Day.
So we're getting the most international woman.
Yeah, we're getting the. okay, sure.
I lived in another country.
Ooh, look at you. Devilish. Gosh, she's so exotic.
I'm really unique for this room, actually.
I like to braid Sierra at parties.
This is my girlfriend. She's been to several postal codes. So yeah, we will we'll probably do some women-centric sketches. I might have probably end up offending a couple of women, but I'll do my best.
We have Sierra here to sort of vet all our creative decisions.
I'll probably make it worse. I'll propagate
does
the
that,
offensive.
Does that not kind of contradict it if we like decide that one woman can then be like
the one that does,
yeah, the authority for all women.
She's like the judicial system.
Isn't that how the American government works?
No, they don't need a woman for that. They just have a bunch of old blokes.
Oh, right.
they established that with the most recent election.
And the token scary blonde lady who makes it all okay.
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure is just a snake in a woman's suit, pretty sure. Like, that's not human. There's a lizard in there
the
or something.
The suit's wearing out. The lizard scales. Is coming through.
They're just her nails.
Conway has, like...
They were vibrant green.
She's perpetrated the human lizard myth single-handedly.
I think we've been reading a bit too much right-wing propaganda, guys.
I think it'd be left-wing if we're talking about Lizard Queen Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant someone else.
Who else?
I assumed you meant Hillary Clinton.
I said Conway.
Oh, did you? Oh, I had Clinton. I was like, this is going to be a bit
It's my
mean.
Obnoxious Canadian
accent. I would say good job, you're pretty, but...
Pretty bad your job.
All right, so yeah, we're going to play some tracks and then come back and actually have a serious conversation. We promise.
It's on the agenda.
Yeah. What's going to be our first topic tonight? I think the first topic tonight is we're going to talk about, does technology erode the self? There you go. That's a pretty big question for us to begin with. So that'll be right coming up after our first track, which is the Pack AD, and this is So What?
Try. Let not that sweet heart think it over. Oh, find a repentation. In another world, they will soon forget you. Only for tonight, this is real life.
There you go. That's Exit Someone with Fade to Black from Dry Your Eyes. And before that was the Pack AD with So What from Positive Thinking. Cracking tunes.
That's a good track, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. Hope the rest of them are half decent. All right, so our first topic tonight for myself, Connor and Sierra is, does technology erode the self? So what we're saying here is, does all forms of technology that we have in today's society erode the self, as in, I guess, the identity of the self and who we are,
of yourself,
who we are as humans and as people. Sierra.
So I've been doing a lot of thinking about this lately, and a lot of worrying, actually, because I'm reading some books, I'm some sort of fear of technology, I'm watching lots of good satire, like Black Mirror, like kind of a dystopic projection of the future where...
It's arguably satire at points, some episodes.
Yeah. And so I've kind of been thinking, I don't think we're at a full point of technology eroding the self, but I think we're heading in a really bad direction. And I think that the more we kind of pull for this, like relying on technology and like giving our information out so easily and having all of these services and constantly turning to technology. And I even find myself, like, I don't like to think of myself as someone who's always online or always checking my phone, but I must be. Like, I must be pulling out my phone 50 times a day or something terrible like that. Even if I try to convince myself, no, I read all the time and I'm trying to talk to people. No, like, I totally spend way more time with technology than I ought to. So that kind of makes me very cautious about where we're heading.
Right.
So your fear is the further integration technology as this cycle of rapid industrialization, particularly in technology, increases.
But yeah. The whole point of technology is to free us from day-to-day labor, to free us from the time-consuming and you know, frustrating chores that were human existence after domestication, and sort of when we started living in villages, we started, you know, our main duties were either collecting food, collecting shelter, farming, you know, preparing shelter, farming, or, you know, female sort of centric jobs at the time would have been like, you know, cleaning clothes, using really slow methods of washing. And so there's all these things that were so time consuming on our time, and we've liberated ourselves from all these things like that. Like, it's interesting. I was reading the book Mother Night by Kurt Vonnegut, and he talks about how there's like different stages in the Industrial Revolution where we sort of liberate ourselves from labor. And the point is, you eventually get to a point where you're only pursuing intellectual pursuits because everything else is automated. And so therefore that seems to me to be the complete opposite of what you're suggesting. So how would you respond?
I think that's an altruistic view that it'll be easy to buy into, and that's how we've gotten to the point where we are. And I think there are definitely those benefits. We're able to have a radio show because of the advancements of technology. There are definitely good things about it. If there weren't, then, you know, we wouldn't have pursued this direction. But I think that because it's not an entirely altruistic pursuit, there's always profits behind these. There's bottom lines. And so companies like Facebook and Google are ultimately not just there for the altruism.
But they're clearly designed to try and do their best to try and reflect who you are, or at least who you think you are, and what you attempt to perceive yourself as.
So we hope.
Like that, you know, that's the point of them, is they're not designed to absorb you in that sense. They're meant to be a reflection of you.
Not yet. But, I mean, as...
You're getting a bit conspiracy theorist here. Like, all right, it's not we're not turning into the Matrix.
No, so. I'm just... Okay, so I read a really good book a couple months ago, and Connor is just about to finish it as well, called Homo Deus. And it's about...
You all know Harari.
Yes. And it's about how humans have gone past this humanism, and we're into the point where we're trying to not be human, go past, almost like the Ubermensch idea, which we talked about in the show today. But it's about how we're increasingly relying on technology, and we're kind of moving into this almost like robot stage where there's this data religion, and we worship technology, and we worship data, because it's this way to kind of create a hierarchy of humans, and then on ultimately like technology being above the human, because it's saying like, oh, you know, everything about human is an algorithm, and we can all be boiled down into data.
But we can't, because, like, you know, a great example of that is if you take marketing, people like myself are apparently the, like, nightmare of marketers, because you can't market to me because I don't buy into all the crap that you try and sell in the advertising, and I'm not susceptible to it because I try and think hard about it and rationalize purchases and decisions. And so, yes, some people can be manipulated by that, you know, but data obviously has a huge role to play because it's the nearest thing to truth. Otherwise, all we're left with is belief, and we end up with Trump. So data cannot, you know, data is one of our biggest assets that we have in today's society.
Right. But I mean, you're an anomaly, you know, and it's getting easier and easier to market to people who weren't susceptible to traditional ideas of marketing. Right. So for example, I was buying Connor some boxing gloves a few weeks ago, and Facebook was aware that I was looking at Sport Check and looking for boxing gloves. And now every time I log into my Facebook feed, I see, oh, you should come back to our website and look at more boxing gloves.
But it's that's how sort of like base it still is, though, is that literally the only way they could even do that was because you typed in boxing once. I know what you mean. Like, I'll get pictures of
new women
shoes at the moment.
sorry, very inappropriate. I apologize.
Serious conversation, Connor.
Sorry, I don't know. Someone might be into that.
What,
sure,
buying women on the
are.
Internet?
Jesus. Just pornography.
Who pays for pornography, Connor?
Oh, you just search it in Google Images.
Anyway, what are you, 12?
To your point.
Do you print them off then in the school computer? No, all right. Where were we?
So you log onto your Facebook feed and you see shoes.
Yeah, so like, yeah, that's like, it's still pretty clumsy in terms of marketing.
But it's a lot more sophisticated than it was when we first started using Facebook, and it's a lot more...
Yeah, I mean, if you delete your cookies, then it wouldn't work. That's the thing. If you just delete your cookies, it wouldn't work.
So. What I like doing is I go to all those ads on Facebook, and I go, not relevant to me.
Just make them sad.
Yeah. That helps them.
Yeah, that's the problem, though.
Because they've tracked me going on Amazon and looking at, like, FIFA 17, whatever. So when they go, FIFA 17, EA Sports, whatever, on Facebook, I go, not relevant to me. That then gives them, wait, so does he want FIFA or does he not want FIFA?
Yeah. I mean, okay, we can argue about how marketing works, but I think, like, the point that I was trying to get at is that I think as we spend more time online and we're spending more time in the public sphere of social media, that we're surrendering a certain aspect of our autonomy and our individuality because, like, and I like to think of myself as quite the individual, but nevertheless, like, I can't help but think, like, oh, all my friends, what are they doing right now? Is their experience more authentic than mine because it looks prettier because they're in Thailand and that beach is gorgeous and here I am sitting in my apartment, like, trying to study? Like, I mean, there's just always this comparison.
Yeah, but that's short-term investment versus long-term investment. That's nothing really to do with technology in terms of, like, your motivations for doing what you're doing is, you know. But, you know, besides that, I think that what we've ended up with and what is brilliant about sort of the latest sort of era of technology is that now everything is so customizable to your taste in that, like, what my experience, you know, my experience becomes almost more authentic then because I can really, like, narrow in on doing things and being around things that I care about. And, like, you know, years ago, I'd have probably watched a lot more films that I didn't want to watch because they were on TV and I was with people and it was the only choice, or, you know, went to the video store and it was all they had at Blockbuster. Like, you know, actually, what I was doing before might have been a bit wider, but I wasn't enjoying myself probably as much in a lot of those situations because I was forced into doing things that really weren't to my taste and never going to be to my taste. It's not about not being exposed to them. It's about them just being shit. And so I think I'm actually more liberated now than I've ever been because of it.
But so you've told us an example before about how you like to rate all of your shows or movies on Netflix so that the algorithm has a better idea of what you like to watch, right?
Yeah.
So you're less exposed to other choices because it has an exact algorithm of what you're going to watch. So it's a lot less chaotic and random than it would have been before. Mm-hmm. And it helps you in a way, sure.
Huge.
What you're going to like. But that's showing that you're letting a robot pick for you.
No, I'm not, because I just told the robot what to do. I told the robot 1,000, like, I've told the robot, like, 2,000 movies, so it has a fucking good, it knows me better than I know me now.
That's terrifying.
But that's the threat, though, and that's the thing.
But it's only picking movies for me. It's not, like,
right now
choosing anything else.
But it's a serious point, though, so technology is increasing. So, okay, so, but imagine, for instance, so, obviously, we're, so, about 21, 22, in your case, 27 now. We've grown up, we've kind of formed who we are with the help of, like, technology, but a lot of what we had experience-wise,
Neopets was very formative in my development.
Was, like, with people, was, like, in places with people. Imagine the next generation
Furbies.
Of kids, right?
First gen,
who grow up with Facebook from the age that they're five, whatever. Yeah. And so many of their social interactions and the influences that begin to create who they are happen online in a sphere which, especially on, like, perhaps Facebook or something like that, or Instagram, is a sphere which is sort of a caricature, a photoshopped caricature of the perfect lives of people that you begin to become desensitized to the truth of that. A lot of people might be suffering with illnesses or might just not have a happy life or whatever. And so it's that building your life, I think, when you're exposed at such a young age, that is perhaps threatening to, like, finding yourself.
I think, if anything, it might not even be better because you can then be taught as you grow up that it's bullshit and that you shouldn't believe it. Like, with us, who were kind of thrown into it, it maybe took us, everybody, a couple of years to kind of realize what was going on and that, you know, for some people might have really been, you know, taking it harder and then they become a little bit more sort of aware of what the reality is when we talk about these things like we are doing now and explain how, yeah, obviously it's all a bit of a facsimile of the reality what happens online. But if you're, like, growing up, I'd hope at least your parents or your teachers or your friends will be able to explain a similar thing, so you're even less likely to be hoodwinked by it than someone who's just thrown into it as the technology's there before we understand it right now.
I disagree. If it's all you've ever known growing up,
yeah,
this life on social media,
yeah,
how are you supposed to know anything else? For example,
because you know your friends in reality and you know people in reality versus
reality
what you see online.
Reality has become mixed. There's a blurred line completely between reality and social media. Young kids that are growing up today, like, I can talk to my 16-year-old sister who, you know, uses Snapchat is 100 times a day, right?
Mm.
And all their conversations are taking place online.
Mm.
And it's all through this online technological filter that it's taking place. And then I look at, like, my niece, who from day one, her life has been online. Sorry, she's like 8, 9 months old.
Non-consensually.
So I just mean, like, you know, her parents are posting pictures of her. So she is going, as she grows up, she's going to have her friends and family knowing exactly what she was like from the day she was born. So I loved that growing up, or I could move to a different place and no one would know me. Now, because you are friends with people online, they're always going to see what you were like before. And you don't have as much room to grow or change because you have that, you're chained to the image of what you were like from the start.
But they see a caricature, an online caricature.
Yeah, you could delete those things. And it's not like that didn't happen before, in a sense, in that we've always, you know, since we've had photography, we've been able to document like our lives. And, you know, before there was Snapchat, there was MSN. Before there was MSN, there was other instant messaging. Before instant messaging, there were letters, there were emails. Like, there's always been a way to communicate beyond the spoken word. But everybody, if you talk to them, like, they may enjoy talking online for the ability to think about it and respond carefully to what they say, but most people still appreciate the value and the enjoyment and the pleasure you can get from a real conversation.
No, I think everyone's different, mate.
But it depends on the people, of course.
It depends on the person, of course, yeah.
I guess I'm just afraid that we're going to lose that, because it feels like we are, and I feel like people are beginning to value...
I only laugh at you because people have been saying theater's going to die for 1,000 years. People have been saying that we're going to lose so many things, that, you know, that music, acoustic music, would die because of digital music. Of course, no.
I'm not quite that. But just like the motivation of people to pursue like alternate paths of what they see online. Like, I remember I was nannying, and perhaps this was just because she was a bit of a myopic 11-year-old. But so 5 years ago, I was nannying this girl, and all she wanted to do was like sit inside and be on her computer or be watching TV. And perhaps it's just because she was moody, like preteen or whatever, but I found like when I was 11, I always wanted to go outside and hang out with friends and do these different things. And now you're increasingly seeing
not according to your mother. Remember that conversation the other night where you said your mother talked about how you didn't want to go skiing and that you stayed in and you thought you were this big outdoorsy child and it turned out weren't?
I was a little bit lazy, but I also did play a lot outside. It just depended on the activity. Skiing scared me, but I did like other outside games.
But like Vancouver is a bit of a weird sort of microcosm itself in that it's renowned as this healthy town where actually people do generally exercise more and eat healthier. Like, it's funny, in psychology classes we've talked about this a lot at UBC, the teacher's like, it's really hard to do sort of a lot of experiments at UBC on sort of antisocial behavior and antisocial habits because the habits are too good of a lot of the students here.
Really?
Yeah,
that surprises me.
Yeah, no, I mean, most students here, like, you know, eat fairly well. Like, I see a lot of people bring food from home and stuff like that. Like, obviously you can still see lineups, a lot of fast food and stuff here, but for the most part, you know, there's a lot of fit people, and there is a lot of activity. You can see that in people here, and a lot of self-awareness of health issues, and, you know, it is that sort of area, Vancouver. I mean, it's one of the greenest cities in the world. I mean, if I've learned anything from Tinder this week in my experiment, it's that girls like hiking for some fucking weird reason. All right.
Well, so we can have a quick concluding thought.
Yeah, go on.
I think this argument's brought up a lot of interesting points. I think Sarah has, I think she has reasonable apprehensions. I think something that you said is that when the next generations are brought up with this as like, that's how they live, I think it is more important than ever that we make sure stuff like philosophy and critical thinking and literature are like absolute cornerstones of educational systems to make people consider like the things that seem so natural to them, because they have no reason to be sad or upset with those things, unlike in the past when we had hard labor, right?
Disturb the comforted, comfort the disturbed.
Yeah, I mean, but you can, you know, people worried that there was never going to be protests again, but what have we seen this year? We've seen this massive backlash, not just in America where Trump gained election, but in every country in the world, we had a protest.
Sad. My protests were bigger.
You know, so clearly, like, that idea that the world has become apathetic and desensitized is bollocks.
To be comforted by our anger.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, as you say, it proves we're still alive. All right, so let's play another song. We'll come back with a new topic. Next up is Dream Whip, and this is Hooker Jew. Hook a do? I don't know. It's D-U. How do you pronounce that?
Do.
Alright, there you go. That was Croy with Hole from Scavenger. And before that was Dream Whip with Hook-a-Doo. I don't know. Doo-doo.
I believe it might be sort of French, or maybe do.
Do. Hook-a-Doo. Two, like two hooker. Maybe. But that's not how you, that's not how you spell
it. It sounds like a Slark
or
Slark kind
of story.
Two birds
with one stone.
Whatever. Anyway, Dream Whip. That was pretty fun. Anyway, good. Terrible name. Good song. All right. So our second question for tonight is another big one. Another big one, I think, but a relevant sort of one this time. Is right-wing politics and sort of, when we say right-wing, we're really talking about the far right-wing stuff. Is it on the rise? Or was it kind of always there in the background? Is there actually an upstart in it? Or
always hearing more about already was there.
Yeah, are they getting more confident? Is that what's going on?
Can we define the parameters of like what time period we're talking about since? Like since the beginning of the 20th century?
I think we've got to really talk about the last 5 years. We're talking like, if we're talking about right, like we're talking about the catalyst is Brexit, and this is...
No. I know what you're talking about in the last 5 years, but as compared to all of human history or as compared...
Well,
compared to 5 years ago.
Okay, we're trying to say, like, is it getting back towards sort of 1920s, 30s, sort of nationalism? Nationalism is a big part of it that we're concerned with. So do you think that's the case? Go on, Sarah. Do you want to go?
Yeah, I think there's sort of like a cycle of nationalism that a country can pursue once it's amalgamated as an actual country, unified. I mean, you saw it with Germany or Italy, right? Like it started out where there wasn't enough of a central country for there to be nationalism in the first place. And nationalism is kind of a modern idea, at least in the last like 200 years, and then, okay, to an extent. But you couldn't, until you had urbanization and until you had mass media, you couldn't really... have propaganda.
Yeah,
you couldn't
I mean, like 300 years.
Yeah, I mean, like
1750, like 70. You know,
yeah,
we're talking
French Revolution, kind of a good onset for it. Yeah. American Revolution, that kind of thing. But so once you have these countries formed, then they have a time period where they can develop the sense of nationalism to the point where you get Nazism and you get Italian fascism, or you get certain forms of communism. And then I think like once you have the completion of that to something as terrible as World War II, you get to see why it's so terrible, and then there's so much shame that follows. So you kind of get to the beginning of this cycle, and then it's allowed a certain amount of time and it can build back up to this sense of frightening hyper-nationalism. And I think America is kind of at that point right now.
I have to completely disagree with you. To be honest, I think that it is so entrenched in the fabric of most of Western societies, especially America. I mean, the idea that America is special and that there's American supremacy above other countries has been around for the entirety of the Cold War. Because, you know, it was used. Nationalism was a big fight in the Cold War, you know, and it's always been that. And what has happened in this last election cycle is that what we've seen is just a reiteration of things that the Republicans have been saying, but much more subtextually in previous elections. They bought they buy the sort of the homophobic, the racist, all these different sections of the vote. They have policies designed to draw them in. Like the KKK were voting Republican before Trump turned up. There is clearly like a systemic thing in America to push nationalism because of the fact they have a military industrial complex. And how do you prop that up if you don't believe that your country is right, your country is better, and that your country is something worth fighting for and isn't just an arbitrary lines drawn in the sand? Like nationalism is a part of the American identity.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all there. I mean, I lived in America for 15 years. Like, I know nationalism.
No other country have I heard people chant USA, USA, for any reason. Any reason, they'll do it.
The amount of American flags in every public setting. But, I mean, I was thinking more of European far-right movements in terms of it being more okay because there's distance from the atrocities of World War II. America's kind of a different story because they haven't had that... they never had the casualties that Germany or France...
But they never had to go we fucked up.
But you can say the same... You can really say the same thing about Russia, but you'd have to say it started with the rise of Putin. And that nationalism was kind of a dirty word with the collapse of the Soviet Union in the 90s. You know, perhaps it was... But Russia has always had a proud history and a proud people, proud... go back to Dostoevsky and Tolstoy. They were talking about Russian identity and whether they were losing it to European ideals and European behavior.
But
Russian identity, even in that, like, Russia's such a huge country. Like, whatever, even in trying to invent a Russian identity, that's propaganda. Like,
yeah,
there's
but
maybe,
they...
there's like, but people
but
like,
I'm just
yeah.
proving that there was a sense of it.
Yeah. Or, yeah, an attempt to hammer down the nation state. Yeah. As a, yeah.
Now, but does that suggest that there's some sort of, Simon, from what you were talking about with Russia and with the United States, it seems to be that there's this static idea of nationalism and of pride. But are you thinking that there's not a static nature to the far right movement?
Well, I think that the far right movement, in terms of its popularity and what it represents, doesn't actually fluctuate as much as we think it does. In that, if you look, conservative parliaments are constantly voted for over the last 100 years in all of these countries we're talking about. You know, the Tories were ruled in Britain for years and years under Thatcher, under John Major, David Cameron. Like, the conservative movement is alive and well in that country. It's, you know, France has perhaps had more socialist governments, but, you know, there's always this flip-flop back and forth. When they get sick after 10 years of whatever government, they want something different, so they go back. So it's...
But in those cases, though, we're looking at, like... So, I mean, for instance, I think what we're really trying to say is our UKIP, our the Front National in France, those like, right-wing, real, like right-wing fascist parties, like, the right-wing, so the conservatives in the UK... The more major right wing party in France and Germany, they're really sort of like, as within each system, they're center right. They're not really right. Otherwise, they wouldn't win. So you need to be sort of center left, sort of center right, to win an election.
Well, at least in your message, not necessarily in your actions. And this is what the Republicans
also,
have done
need your actions to,
beautifully.
To dovetail with your message to a degree to ensure you keep winning elections.
But, you know, this is like under Reagan, under Bush, all these people, they say one thing. And the subtext to it, which really is talking about another thing. And, like, you know, the policies don't really... Like, you know, Mike Pence sat on that stage last year in November when we had the vice presidential debate. And it's a perfect example. You go back and watch that video now. He sits there barefaced and says, oh, yeah, like, what Trump's talking about with the wall and with this. It's an analogy. And he's not actually going to do any of these things. He's just going to tighten immigration policy and that. And he, like, he sits there and pretends, like, all these fucked up things he says are just sort of...
Messages.
Yeah. And like, yeah, like, the metaphors for what's
I
actually...
I think Mike Pence didn't know what he was getting into with Donald Trump, to be honest. He was like, wait, you aren't actually serious, were you? Are you kidding me? I actually was pretty... Oh, God, what a moron. I didn't know I was backing him.
He just sits in the corner of the Oval Office going, no, Donald, no.
Please stop this.
Donald,
I'm
stop
pretty
tweeting.
I'm pretty extreme myself, but not this bad.
I'm pretty sure, like, they'll be sitting there and Mike Pence will be like, Donald? And he's like, Mike, can you go get us some KFC? Mine's a bucket. Thank you.
And he's right, like, we have access
Bannon,
to the
what
nice...
What are you saying?
We have access to the nicest meals prepared by this chef, and you want KFC and Taco Bell? What's the point of being the president?
Please have it give him a massive heart attack. Please.
So but returning to the idea of the question. So Sierra, were you saying that there has been an increase in far right sort of association,
sympathization?
Yeah, or like, but and so it's like you're saying not really, because it's always been there.
I think that a lot of people are perhaps more confident and just, you know, it's like it was almost a reaction, I think, to public political correctness as well. I think is part of it is I think there was a reaction to there was, you know, in the last couple of years we've seen such a strong emphasis on political correctness and a lot more people thinking about it and really trying to nail down appropriate behaviors and appropriate choice of words and all these things. Like, we've had a lot more conversations about that in the last 5 years than we did in the 5 years previous. So there may even be a reaction to that, and people, you know, and these are superficial things, but they're kind of using it as a launch pad to get into way more like actually disturbing behaviors. And we can't deny the amount of attacks that have occurred recently on like Muslim places of worship, Jewish places of worship. And I don't think it's that those people suddenly think differently. I think it's that they've got the nerve now because they think they can get away with it. They think that they're either in the right or that people don't care or there's too much of it to go on for anybody to catch them. Like, you know, I mean...
They're trying to, like, radicalize the others on their side.
Yeah.
Kind
of,
yeah.
I mean, did you see the face of those two pair being sentenced for abusing a... They went to some, like, kids' party
they
with
put
Confederate
up
flags.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, it was disgusting. But they're sitting in court crying. And I don't think in the either of them thought in their right mind they'd ever end up in court for it.
Yeah, no.
No.
There's a difference between a Confederate flag, though, and actually, like, killing people.
But this was like they're screaming, you know, racist words at them. They're like,
oh, okay. I didn't really hear about it.
It was disgusting, absolutely disgusting. Okay. I think it's also that kind of mob mentality. And the interesting thing about mob mentality is it can go both ways. People always think of mob mentality as being this really negative thing where if you're in a negative environment, you're going to act more negative. That's how you start riots. But it actually works both ways. In that, if you're in a group of people who are all behaving really well, it does have a social effect where people start to behave better. So if we're now in this toxic environment of sort of poor language and poor behavior that is occurring at least in some spheres of, and you know, maybe this is part of the problem with becoming more niche, and we've talked about this before, like the fact that your news and everything becomes more niche, you get a very warped sense of the world. Right. But I think it those people weren't not fascists before, they're just inspired and encouraged now.
I guess, and the rise of social media, I think particularly in the last maybe half decade, more than before, people our age are now emboldened to like share a lot more political stuff online. And of course, like all the newspapers that you subscribe to, whatever, they're always posting political stuff these days. And so I think it becomes easier for all sides of the political spectrum to find their people. And those shy people who would have, you know, pre-Facebook, whatever, not really been up to too much because they didn't want to, like, you know, piss off people. Now they're emboldened, not even necessarily in real life, but at least online, to go and post in forums and to raise a cry. So perhaps, I think it's hard to know without any sort of data, but at least there could be a shy vote or a shy support that have come to prominence more recently.
Also, I just think it's like it's our generation's battle to fight. And without the historical kind of background of saying, oh, there was always this kind of conservative power at force, there was always kind of people who are a little bit more xenophobic, racist, sexist, whatever. I mean, I think there's this idea that in the past couple decades, we've been pushing forward and we've been in this world, at least in the West, of liberalism, and we're kind of moving left. And I just took a really interesting Latin American government class, and it talked about how all of these dictatorships, authoritarian right-wing dictatorships were crumbling, and they, for the most part, democratic left-wing governments were replacing them. And I wrote my essay on how this sort of left tide was fading because you start to have conservative leaders come back into power. And then that's kind of replicated around the world as you're having these more and more right-wing parties that are elected into power, and you're seeing movements like Brexit and like Trump being elected.
It's also to do with economics, is the other thing to remember. Economics always plays a way bigger role than it ever gets credit for in voting. In that people always think that social issues are like what it comes down to. But it
all depends how hungry you are.
Yeah, really, a lot of the time it comes down to like jobs and the economy. And like, because my own dad, I know in England, voted conservative, even though for the most part he's a liberal guy. Like, he's not homophobic, he's not sexist, he's not, you know, on the social issues, I think he would vote Labour. But he earned enough money, he had four kids, but, you know, if you earn decent money, have four kids, you don't actually get a lot of compensation from the government. So, like, to him, it made sense to vote conservative because he was like, I want to protect my family. That's what I care most about. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to vote for whoever's going to make sure I have the most money to do that. And that's a very powerful motivation. And so we've had a bit of a mini recession. I know the Dow Jones and all these things are blowing up at the moment, and they have been for the last couple of years. They've been doing well since the crash in 08. Everything's recovered. But we haven't actually seen like a ton of extra jobs added to the market. There is a low unemployment rate
dropped,
in America.
Quite low, right?
And,
under Obama,
and because of the high immigration rates in the West, I'm not saying I believe this because I'm an immigrant myself, but there are people who think that their job losses are directly connected to immigrants coming in. And so then there's like, how do I react to losing my job and economics being my primary priority?
Well, I just got a great thought on that, which is Doug Stanhope puts that best, which is, he's like, I live in Arizona, I live on the border, so I see these illegal immigrants, as they're called, being arrested for trying to get across the border, and they're there and they don't speak English, they got no money, they got no shoes on, they, you know, they barely know how to read and write. It's like, dude, if that guy's stealing your job, you're a fucking idiot. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, why are you
try working construction.
Like, what is, you know, do you really have no skills? Have you taken nothing from the 30, 40 years you've been on this planet that you're not competitive with this person in the job environment? Like,
that's kind of sad though. I mean, like, also perhaps you're an idiot, but also perhaps like you've been disadvantaged, and now you're being kicked out.
You're just looking for
him.
A scapegoat, right? I mean, there's no easy answer. So you got to find who's the person you can blame most easily, and it's not going to be the majority, right? So it's like, why could Hitler and the Nazis use Jews as a scapegoat? Not because there were these tangible actual realities. It's they're a minority in Germany, and they're easy to blame historically.
Yeah, absolutely. You see it all over the world. And that's it. The only thing I think that will fight conservatism is really consciousness on the left, but like in a different way to what we're doing now. This sort of anger and this sort of constant beration of anybody who disagrees with you is not the way to prove it. Like you've got to have a conversation with everybody, even if you hate what they're saying. Have a conversation with them. You might not convince them, but maybe someone overhears you who's sitting on the next table who's listening, and you convince them. At least say your piece and say it right and say it intelligently. Think about the facts. Use real reasoning, not emotion, because you don't have to swing everybody. You literally have to change about 4% of the population's mind, and you could swing any vote in any country.
But also, and the thing is, like, as well, like, when you engage in conversation, like, don't be trying to like change their mind. Try to understand them.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Because as much as you try to change their mind, they'll give you the red herring sort of
things. Yeah, you can't change their mind, though, unless you understand them.
Exactly,
absolutely.
Really try to get to what really is, not just the fact that immigrants, like, what is really...
Well, that's why it comes down to economics, is because that's what they really care about.
That's all well and good, but who's actually going to take that advice?
Well, who knows? Who knows who's even listening, Sierra?
No, I mean, if you're listening...
Please say hello.
Take that advice.
I believe that wholeheartedly, and I'd love for us to be able to have conversations with people who disagree with us, but I don't see that happening.
But if you say it enough times, people will hear it. We'll go right back to marketing right at the end of this show. If anybody is going to absorb the information from an advert, they have to see it 7 times on average, and that might mean that we have to say this a lot more than that before people start buying into it. And no, not everyone's going to buy into it, because not everyone buys into anything ever. So that can't be your starting point. Your starting point should be, let's at least just try and improve how many people are having real conversations and are thinking. And I think they are. I think there's a lot of well-constructed arguments that, like, for instance, like, Last Week Tonight is a perfect example where it is a left-leaning show, but for the most part, they do their damnedest to give a nuanced explanation of whatever it is, explain both sides, why they feel that way, and try and present a solution that is rational and benefits the majority or whatever it is their cause is about. And that's the kind of attitude we need to have. We need, like, you know, if it's something you really care about, you do the deep research. If it's something that you only care a little bit about, look who has done the deep research, listen to them, or at least listen to a few sources of that type, make an informed decision, and we'll see where we go from there.
And it's always worth considering that the second law of thermodynamics can apply in social situations as well, which is that for every action there will almost certainly be an equal and opposite reaction.
Cheers, Einstein. All right, that's the end of our show. We'll see you next week for International Women's Day. We'll be hosted by Sierra Wiley.
Better be excited.
So join in for that. And we'll see you then. We're going to leave you with the Luyas, and this is Beating Bowser from Human Voicing.